Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
elevator going up.
We make an executive decision, a clinical precision, jumping from windows filled with indecision.
No. The button here says third floor, Jesse Dayton. All right, Patrick, so we went to yet another new venue in D.C.
We did.
Recently, one we had never been to before, right? It's called the City Winery, which is part of like a chain of...
There's several.
Restaurants and performance
big cities,
clubs, right?
Yeah,
there's, I think there's one in Nashville, there's one in Atlanta.
Chicago, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a chain of stuff, and they only opened in D.C. a few months ago or several months ago.
Right.
With not more than a year, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
And we had an opportunity to go to the City Winery to do another artist interview backstage.
Yeah, it was great.
And before we reveal who that was, let's just say that the place was like super swanky, wasn't it?
It really was, man. It's like one of those places where you're like, I don't belong here. Yeah. And also, they had a Bob Mould elevator. We got into it. I've never seen one of those before.
Sort of. Yeah, so what you're referring to is that on the night we went to go do this interview, there's actually two performance spaces in the club. And one of the spaces, Bob Mould was doing a solo show. And so when you go in the elevator, if you hit like floor two, it said right there, Bob Mould.
Bob Mould.
Right.
Yeah. Sunshine it's Rock, like, floor two.
It's like appliances, you know,
lighting,
leisure wear. Bob
Children's
Mould.
Bob Mould.
Yeah, that's right. But we did not go there to interview Bob Mould.
We did not.
We interviewed Jesse Dayton.
Yeah, it was great.
And this was really a super fun interview.
Oh,
one
my
of
gosh.
Great times.
What an entertaining dude and a very nice guy to boot.
So Jesse Dayton is a I guess, roots rock kind of slash country singer.
Yeah, if you had to put him somewhere.
He's a Texan. Let's just say he's from
that's
Austin,
right.
Texas,
that's
and
right.
he plays that kind of music, right?
Yeah, he came out of the wilds of Texas to Austin, and he does play that kind of music, and he knows it really well, folks. He learned it firsthand.
Yeah, and he's been putting out records for a good 20-plus years, I think, and he's also been a session musician, most notably, I think, with Waylon Jennings, but some others as well. And
done some movie work and all kinds of TV work.
We're going to get into some of that stuff tomorrow. But in the first part of this interview that you're going to hear right now, we're going to talk about his new album, which is called Mixtape Volume 1. And it's a covers album.
Yep.
So
love that.
He put together a bunch of covers of songs that inspired him. And the artist list is super diverse, including like AC/DC. Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah. The Clash.
It's sort of all kinds of stuff, right? And it's
stuff y'all gonna enjoy.
Yeah. It's great. Jackson Brown, Neil Young. I'm looking at this list here right now. And one that's been kind of a surprise that has really I think captured a lot of attention. And you're gonna hear that. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And here's Jesse.
I don't mind you coming here, wasting all my time. It's when you're standing oh so near, see I kind of lose my mind, Well, it's not the perfume that you wear, it's not those ribbons in your hair.
Jesse Dayton, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us backstage here at City Winery. This is kind of...
It's like one of those places where you walk in and you're like, I don't belong here.
It's a little swanky.
Throw me out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is something, man. We've been to a couple of nice backstage areas, green rooms, I guess they call them.
Yeah.
But not one this nice.
No, this one really is right yeah. up there.
Well, yeah. if they'll let a guy from Beaumont, Texas back here, you guys are just fine.
So, Jesse, tell us a little bit about your new record. I want to start with that. And actually, we should take a moment of silence here for Rick Ocasek, right?
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. Well, I want to get right into this. One of your covers on this new album, which is all covers, is Just What I Needed.
Just What I Needed,
and,
yeah.
And that would, I think, to a lot of people maybe seem unexpected coming from a sort of a country rocker like yourself. So how did that come about?
Well, I mean, first thing, you know, being a kid on the Gulf Coast, I grew up on the Texas-Louisiana border. And, you know, besides having like all the major country and Western superstars playing there 7 nights a week, and we had Zydeco and a lot of rhythm and blues, we also listened to what everyone else did, which was the radio. And I love the Cars. And I always kind of viewed Rick Ocasek as a modern extension of Buddy Holly. And other people I've talked to didn't really see it that way. They always thought he was like this kind of, you know, hip guy who was combining, you know, edgy New York stuff like Suicide, stuff like that, with like power pop.
Right.
And, but I didn't hear it like that growing up where I grew up. You know, like Best Friend's Girl to me is just like a Buddy Holly song.
Right.
And anyway, I loved it. And I used to do this joke on stage where I would go out, you know, hey, what if George Jones sang the Cars? And we would, you know, I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time. And everyone would go, yeah, that's funny, but you need to do the whole song.
Oh, yeah.
So I started doing the whole song like that. And we just replaced that keyboard part with a pedal steel,
yeah.
You know. And it's just like any other great song. It really lends itself to playing it whichever way you want, you know.
I think to a lot of people, they might have thought, well, if Jesse's going to do a Car song, it would be My Best Friend's Girl, because that's sort of a rockabilly kind of song. But yeah. you took on the challenge, I think. So.
Well, I mean, I didn't do it intentionally. It was kind of I was on tour with Social Distortion when I did that the first time. And then we're like, hey, what if we do it like a George Jones shuffle, yeah. you know? But, you know, that was kind of the intent of the record, was to write, you know, try to write unique arrangements to where if the original writer was to ever hear it, they'd say, I like this because the guy's not mimicking me and he's making it his own thing. And, you know. It's not always easy to do.
Not at all. I mean, you close the record with State Trooper, and I love the sort of the tremolo guitar effect that you guys put on that thing and the way it shimmers. And I was, you know, doing some research, and I saw that once, I guess, Bruce told you that he liked your boots, right?
Yeah.
Thought Austin was a cool place. But
I was on cloud nine for like a week.
Turnpike, riding on a wet night, neath the refiner's glow, out where the great black rivers flow. License registration, I ain't got none, but I got a clear conscience about the things that I've done. Mr. State Trooper, please don't stop me. Please don't stop me. Please don't stop me.
That it seems like that song fit right into your DNA as well as most of them do. Did you spend a lot of time, Jesse, looking for these songs, or was it pretty easy to get the track list?
Well, initially I had a whole lot more, but I was trying to think of what would work with my kind of East Texas twang.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm not Doug Somm. I couldn't pass for an English guy on, you know, everyone thought She's About a Mover was guys from
right.
from London, and they happen to be guys from San Antonio.
Right.
But yeah, it's so some of the songs work, some of them didn't, a couple of them didn't make it. Yeah, good stuff.
Did you end up having any situations where you said, hey, I don't necessarily love this arrangement, but other people were like, you gotta keep this in because it's fantastic? Or were you kind of calling the shots all the way down the line for each
team? No, I mean, I had been playing Just What I Needed, that arrangement, for like a long time.
Oh, have you been? Okay.
Yeah, but everything else was new.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so what I'd do is I would just get my acoustic guitar and go out to my studio and in Austin and just hang out and see what sounded natural.
Yep.
Because that's, you know, now it's become such a cheeky kind of thing for people to, you know, let's make it a bluegrass song. Right. And it just sounds, 9 times out of 10, it sounds forced.
Yep.
And it's like, no, dude, that's not that clever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then some of the stuff, we did keep it pretty close. Like Redneck Friend by Jackson Browne. Mm-hmm. And She Does It Right, which is a song that this band called Dr. Feelgood, which never really made it here, but they influenced like all these punk bands. They were like totally a pub rock
band. Yeah.
The way that woman walks, and if there's something I like better, it's the way she baby talks. She does it right. She does it right. She works hard every night just to make me feel alright. She told me not to worry, and I ain't a single trouble in sight. I said you ought to see a jerk. You ought to see her walk the floor. She gets back to her seat. The people grab her more. She does it right. She does it right. She works hard every night just to make me feel alright. She told me not to worry, and I ain't a single trouble in sight.
Proto punk for
Stiff
sure.
Records, right?
Yeah, like Stiff yeah. Records. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with the incredible guitar player Wilco Johnson. Right?
Yeah, yeah, we got to play with him.
Did you?
Yeah, we just played with him like less than a year ago.
That's wild.
We played in Spain. We played some shows with him.
And wow, that must have been cool.
It was cool. Man.
Yeah, that is very cool. It's funny. We have some friends in this band called Dot Dash, and they were talking about they finally got to play with the Monochrome set, and what was it? The guitar player, Lester Square, asked to borrow the guitar player's amp, and he was like, no, this is going to be great. I'm going to get the Lester Square settings on my amp. It's going to be like perfect. And goes over there. Everything was cranked to 10.
Yeah. He's like, that's great.
Hey, if I want to make it quieter, I play it quieter. If I want to make it louder, I play it louder.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's usually in the fingers.
Right, right. Exactly.
You know, if you put these recognizable guitar players on different rigs, say if you put Eddie Van Halen on, say, James Burton's rig, it would still sound like Eddie Van Halen. Right. Yeah. Or vice versa.
Yeah. That's wild to think about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to get back to the covers for here in a minute. As a songwriter, what do you learn from covering other people's material?
Well, you learn so much. I mean, like, I grew up, as Malcolm Gladwell said, I grew up putting in my 10,000 hours of playing like honky tonk and roots music and, you know, Zydeco and all that stuff. And so by the time I got to play with these legends, and I knew those arrangements kind of inside out, and I knew all the little tricks, you know, all the little, key changes and intros. And,
yeah.
You know, I was used to having these old, you know, kind of redneck guys come on. Okay, boys, come on, Ray Price. And 1, 2, 3, 4. You don't even know what key it's in, you know. Right. And, but, you know, one thing you learn about playing other people's songs, besides lyrically, which Everyone has their homie closer Tony Danza kind of thing, but then you read the words and it's homie closer Tiny Dancer, right. And that's always a big epiphany. But it's also a big epiphany to see the way they space things out, and where they let things breathe, and they're always not trying to fill every hole, and you just learn so much. I mean, I'm still a huge student of music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go out doing that if you're
worth your salt.
Yeah. Exactly. If you're still intellectually curious, as they say.
right.
Well, and you got a good education at a young age, right? You got to play with Waylon and Johnny Cash and these guys. I mean, there's no good way to ask this question other than this. What was that like?
It was amazing. I mean, I was as shocked as anyone. And I was on this kind of cheesy Nashville TV show called Crook and Chase.
I remember that show.
Yeah. And if you turn the sound down, it looked like it would have been like, you know, Christian broadcasting thing. You know what I mean? And I say that with some reverence, but also with some, you know, little attitude too, because I didn't have any business being on there. But this woman named Evelyn Shriver was a big executive in Nashville. She came and saw me at the Continental Club in Austin. And she's like, your music's too old timey. We'll never get you on the radio, but we could probably get you on TV. And I was like, great. So she calls me like a few days later, come to Nashville. So I go on this show and I'm like a total, you know, fish out of water. And she brings Christofferson backstage, and Chris comes backstage, and I'm sitting there, you know, sitting next to Ralph Emery while he gets his makeup done. And it's the whole kind of Nashville experience. And Chris is really cool to me. Yeah, I'm from Texas too, man. Yeah. And then after the show, me and Chris went to the Gibson Guitar Factory, and they opened it up at like 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And I think we smoked a joint in the back of the limo, and we talked about like these books on Lincoln and Nathan Bedford Forrest and all this crazy stuff. And anyway, we became friends, and I thought, okay, well, that was a great night in Nashville. I'll just go back to Austin the next morning. Waylon called me, you know, in my hotel room, said, hey, I saw you on TV last night with Chris, and I cut my finger cooking with Jesse Coulter, and you want to come over to Woodland Studios and play guitar for me? And I went and knocked on the door, and Johnny Cash opened the door, and it was crazy. My life just changed that day. And the weird thing about it is if the listeners can Google my name with Johnny Cash and Waylon, there's all this footage of that very first day. And I'm the young kid who's barely haired over, you know.
Yeah, how old were you then?
I think 24. But I didn't know from Bean Dip, but I could do an amazing impression of Jerry Reed on my guitar. So I just shut up and played Jerry Reed licks, and everybody liked it.
I was gonna say, they must have liked what you did, right?
They did, because he called me like 2 weeks later and said, do you want to come play on my record? And I was like, of course, please, you know, like, thank you. And he said, yeah, it's going to be you and Mark Knopfler and Pete Anderson. And then I got there, and he goes, Pete and Mark aren't going to be here. So, and I ended up playing on that record. And after that, that opened, you know, the floodgates, and I just got on a bunch of sessions, and it was usually with the older guys, which were the only guys that I cared about anyway. I wasn't really into the contemporary stuff that was happening in Nashville. Right. Some of it was great, you know, but a bunch of it I wasn't, you know, into the
right
the scene.
No, it seems like you'd fit in better with Waylon and Johnny, the outlaw types. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't have a good way to phrase this other than, you know, what was Johnny Cash like? I mean, we don't interview a lot of people who have met Johnny Cash, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, just what was he like to be with and work with?
Well,
and,
he was a total sweetheart. And he had kind of a spiritual aura. And I say that as a science guy, not as your typical guy with a accent like mine, you know, who's
right.
Believes in talking snakes. I mean, he he really did have kind of a spiritual aura around him, like a thing, you know?
Yeah.
But he was really funny. Like the first hour we were hanging out, him and Waylon were talking about, he goes, "You ever seen the movie Aliens?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love Aliens." He goes, and Johnny goes, "Put some reverb on my voice," to the engineer, and he puts a bunch of, and he goes, "We're all fucked and doomed, man." And he was doing Bill Paxton. Yeah. Bill Paxton from Fort Worth, rest his soul.
Yeah.
Great actor. But you know, they were just, this is something weird too, is that Shooter told me that they had like a small kind of brotherly falling out.
Okay.
And all those guys did. You know, they were all like, you know, they're like brothers, like family.
Yeah.
And John was riding high from the Rick Rubin thing. And so the Highwaymen he wasn't doing the Highwaymen.
Yeah.
And so they hadn't spoken a few weeks, or, you know, not even that long, but they were so happy to see each other.
Is that right?
And, yeah, the stories that day, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, they told me incredible stories. I mean, what Johnny Cash told me, a story about Waylon getting busted for writing a check for blow in Bucksnort, Tennessee. but they didn't bust him. They just took it and took the check. And he goes, "Waylon, don't write a check for this." And Johnny was like, "What'd you put on the memo line? Drugs?" And they were just dying laughing the whole time. It was just great. And you know, it was, and Waylon was still kind of edgy and cool, and, you know, still seemed like he could steal your girlfriend if he wanted to. You know?
Right. That was cool.
It was great.
Really cool guy, mm-hmm. and fun to hear him talk about his experiences with some legends.
Yeah, and I would thank you, Jim, for editing out my sniffles, because I was a little ill. I was still a little drugged down from my trip to Bourbon and Beyond. But also, I don't know about you folks, but if I'm not feeling super well and someone goes to shake my hand, I'm like, "Hey, I've just been getting over a cold." And Jesse had a roadie named Bearcat, and I didn't want to shake his hand. He appreciated that. Even though he looks like a guy who could shake off any kind of illness.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, yes. He looked to be made of a hearty stock.
He really did.
All right.
Kind of guy you need on the road.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, we're going to do part two with Jesse, where he's going to talk about some of his movie and TV work.
Yep.
it's even more bizarre than you might even
you won't believe it
be thinking. And we'll do that tomorrow. So
cool.
If anybody wants to comment on Jesse Dayton's work or country music or what have you, Austin music, Texas, all that sort of stuff, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com or call, leave a message. We'll put your voice on a show.
Sure.
Why not? 612-440-1984. That would be the phone number.
Yep.
Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those at Suburbs Pod. All right, let's move on to part two. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Jesse had a roadie assistant helper named Bearclaw, and he appreciated that I didn't...
Bearcat.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Jesse had an assistant kind of... Jesse had a roadie named Bearclaw.
I thought that was your nickname.
Oh, that's right.